Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
What's going on, Devin?
Not
what
much.
What do you have for us today in the way of a quote?
Quote. America. America, half-brother of the world.
Half brother of the world.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think since again I've got my the book, The New Dictionary of Thoughts, and by new I think it was made in like the 40s, so
nice.
It's kind of an old school. I think there he's talking about just, you know, the amount of immigration and how everyone has Right. Everyone's, you know, this or that, or Irish or Italian or you know, whatever, Islander, Asian, Right. African, it's, so everyone has a connection, and since so many people come here, you know, it just, everyone, I think, has a connection, and we send out all our pop, you know,
right,
movies
yeah.
and music, so everyone has kind of a connection to us, for good or bad, I guess.
Right, yeah, and like you were saying, all the difference, like, African American, Asian American, Irish American, you know, whatever, Latin American. There's a term that goes before it, right? So it's like the half brother, because you're not like, I mean, a lot of us, you know, I mean, obviously everyone around the world, but especially in the States, you know, everyone was an immigrant at some point, right? Unless you're Native American, right? Because then they're like they were from here first. But even that, you know, like, everywhere around the world, everyone has come from the kind of Asian, African
end
of the world, and everyone's come to America one way or another from somewhere else. So,
yeah,
but I think that pulls us all together, right? We all have that half side that's American, and then the other side that has something to do with where we've come from before. You know,
right.
We all come here and fallen on this like land that has nourished us all.
That's right. Yeah, it's
America.
I thought it was cool. Yeah, and it was an interesting quote. I never really thought about it that way.
And with the Olympics, you know, there's so many
athletes
that are from all over the place. And also, it's really cool. There's a lot of athletes that are representing other countries that were born in the States or live in the States, you know. So it's cool to see that as well. You know, like someone whose their family is from Jamaica or from, you know, Italy or whatnot. And then they're, you know, so it's just kind of that's something I think that, you know, represents the unity of our country and of our world, as well as along with the Olympics, which is just like heartwarming and a breath of fresh air, you know, in a time in our entire world that's diverse. So it's been really nice to see that, and very inspiring. It's cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that, though. Yeah. I also think that's, you know, the half-brother, like I said, yeah, like you said, everyone kind of has, they feel like, you know, you're kind of part of that, whether it's because America is the, you know, like the world power, you know, so we kind of have our, you know, a hand or a part of something in every country around the world or something's going on. You know, there's always something that we're associated with either positively and hopefully less, you know, often negatively, but, you know.
Right. Yeah. A half brother can also be annoying and you might not want him around. You know, it's
right. Exactly. You're like, I'm only related to you by our mother.
Yeah.
The Mother Earth, right? We're all, everyone's half brothers. We're all part of the Earth.
Yeah.
Cool. That's good. I like that one.
Yeah.
I have another quote, and we can kind of talk about this as well. This goes along with kind of summertime and the Olympics. So the quote is, "Rest is not idleness, and to lie sometimes on the grass under a tree on a summer's day, listening to the murmur of the water or watching the clouds float across the sky is by no means a waste of time."
Mm.
And I like that when I was kind of looking up some stuff and thinking about, you know, summertime and this kind of slow pace and the idleness. And I get antsy in the summer because I feel like I should be doing something.
Right.
You know, because I'm a teacher, so I have the days off. You know, it's like I wake up in the morning and sit around for a couple hours. And, like, what am I doing with that time? Should I, like, be going right away, get down the shop, start working on something or build something or make something or read something or, you know, so... I have been reading a lot and then also just been kind of relaxing a lot and, you know, catching up on social media. And I sometimes will feel guilty about that, but I also think that there's, like a rejuvenation in that as well as, well, I'm busy so much throughout the year where it's just everyone's lives are busy. So it's nice to kind of really appreciate and slow down a little bit and take that time to relax and appreciate that idleness. So.
Mm. Well, and also I think there's a line in the quote where it says rest. So instead of just lounging, I mean, rest, it says that you've done something pretty much that you need rest for.
Yeah. That's the first line is rest is not idleness.
Right. So it
rest is action. It's not nothing.
Right, but it's saying that you're resting from something. So it's not that you're just being just idle or just not doing enough. You've rested because you've done something else, so you deserve a rest.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You rest from something. So you're not just not doing anything and then idleness by itself, but rest based off of work.
Right, right.
Yeah. But I like that, you know, I like the rest of the quote. We're just talking about like lying under a tree, you know, watching the clouds go by, you know, like listening to the murmur of water running by. All those things are not a waste of time.
Scrubs.
I do appreciate that sometimes.
Scrolling through YouTube. Does that count?
Exactly.
Happy rest.
As long as you're outside, you know, listening to the birds and scrolling through
YouTube. And I haven't been able to watch much YouTube in these last, cause I'm, you know, the Olympics are taking place in Japan, so the time's off on the East Coast, so it's basically opposite time. So anytime I jump on YouTube, it always pops up with Olympic suggestions, and it's never they don't leave anything to guess. It's someone with, like, a flag behind them holding up, like, a gold medal. So you can't, you can't unsee it. Saying, not going to watch that. I'm not going to watch that tonight because I know blah, blah, blah won or we didn't win or someone. So I've kind of gotten off of everything, which has also been nice.
Right, yeah.
To pretty much be off all social media and news. You know, I'm not reading news, which is nice, actually.
Right. Yeah, speaking of that, we just completed the Governor's Cup race this year, which is an overnight race. We start Friday evening, the first weekend of August, the first few days of August. This year actually was, I think Sunday was August 1st. So whatever weekend overlaps the first few days of August is always the Governor's Cup that, you know, Chesapeake Bay and St. Mary's College puts on the Governor's Cup. It's a sailboat race down the bay. It's 68.4 miles, I think it is. Mm-hmm. And we start in the afternoon and the evening and then race all night through the night. So, you know, we did that on Friday night, and then Saturday we just kind of relaxed through the day and had food and did the award ceremony, and then Sunday sailed home. So we had this like 3 days. So we left early Friday morning to get down to Annapolis and then sail the race, and then left early Sunday morning and sailed and motored all the way home and got home at 9:30. So we had this like 3 days of kind of being detached from a lot of like social media. And I mean, obviously we had our phones and stuff with us, but just being on the water for that amount of time and like enjoying that whole process and being part of it. We finished the race really quickly because we had a north wind. So we're sailing down, you know, south down the Chesapeake Bay. And when you're talking about in sailing terms and wind terms, you say the way that the wind is coming from. So when you call it a north wind, it means it's coming from the north. So it's blowing south, but coming from the north. So we had a north wind, which in all the years that I've been doing the Governor's Cup, which I've done it off and on since I was in high school. So for the last 20 years, I've probably done at least 10 or 15 Gov Cups. I've never, ever had a north wind. It's always a south wind or an east wind. It's always blowing either directly in your face or just a little bit off your bow. And you got to just kind of work your way upwind, you know, down the bay all night long. And so we had the wind directly behind us. So we just put up our spinnaker, which if you're not familiar with sailing, that's the big colorful sails that you see on sailboats. And you use them when you're sailing downwind, when you're sailing with the wind. So we just put that up and just cruised straight down the bay and got past just so fast. I mean, we made it all the way down to our turn, which goes up into the St. Mary's River, up to the college and the finish line right around midnight, which usually we don't hit that mark until daybreak. So six or seven or eight hours later.
Well, for context, how long does it take you to motor steadily with no sails pretty much from the bay
to St. Mary's.
Yes.
So that would probably take us, let's see, so probably like 12 hours, probably 12 to 15 hours, with good conditions motoring.
Right.
It took us 15 hours, just over 15 hours to get all the way home, which is from St. Mary's up to our dock, which is about 2.5 or 3 hours north of where we started the race. So let's say about 12 hours with good conditions, 12 to 14 hours motoring.
Right, yeah. and a straight line.
Right, in a straight line. And our boat, you know, motoring at like 2,500 RPMs is going to put us at about 5.5 or 6 knots. So that's, you know, five miles an hour, something like that.
So which is a healthy speed for sailing.
Yeah, right.
If you didn't have
sailing is pretty good. Yeah.
Right, mm-hmm. Right.
It's okay. You know, it's a good steady speed. On the way home this year, we actually had a south wind, so it switched. So it was blowing us up the bay from the south, blowing north. And so we were able to put up a kind of a – we actually had – it was a little rainy, so we have a big bimini that covers the entire – like a canvas cover that covers the entire cockpit area of the boat and a little bit forward, so we were able to sit underneath of it. So we didn't put up our main sail, which is our big sail that's closer to the back of the boat. We left that down, put up the bimini, and just put up a small sail in the front that just gave us some more speed. So we for maybe half the time back, we were averaging somewhere between like 6 and 9 knots. So we were getting good speed, and the tide was going with us, so we had some waves, like 3 or 4 foot waves that would kind of roll up, and we'd be able to kind of surf down the waves and pick up speed. So our way down and our way back, both ways, were, you know, averaging, say, somewhere between 6 and 9 knots all day long, all night long. And we ended up finished the race in 12 hours and just over 12 hours, because we started at 3:15 and we finished at 3:34 in the morning.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Record time, perfect conditions, beautiful weather. It was, you know, in the 70s all day, almost through the night, just gorgeous. And with the wind at your back, it's not blowing in your face, so you don't get that kind of cold breeze, you know, throughout the night. So
yeah,
you're able to stay warm. And
you you guys got in before the sunrise. Mm-hmm. I remember I've only done it once, but it was, we were in a smaller boat. It was rough conditions, and not a favorable wind. And we didn't, I forget what time we got in, but it was very hot. I think it was the afternoon sometime, or maybe like 10 or 11. Yeah. I feel like we got in. So you pulled in at 3 something.
Yeah. So before that, our best time, starting at the 3:15 or ish or so, we finished at 5:14 in the morning. So it had been like 14 hours was our best time before that. So we cut off a couple hours off of that, and it was just perfect. It was a perfect race. It was beautiful. We made one critical mistake in the race, which cost us first place, but we did end up getting second place. So, we missed a mark, or there was a mark we had to round. So we had to go around a mark to, you know, for the race course. And we put in a mark that I put in a mark in the GPS system that I thought was the mark, and it ended up being not the mark by about a couple hundred yards.
Yeah.
And so we realized it and had to like turn around, and we kind of did a turn and S turn back around the mark, and it cost us about 20 to 30 minutes, turn around, going back 10 or 15 minutes and then coming back 10 or 15. So we ended up losing the race by about a minute and a half. If we hadn't made that mistake, we would have won the race by a half an hour. So, but that's okay. It was an amazing race and an honorable finish. we saw another boat kind of taking the same course as us, and they never turned. So we're like, well, that boat didn't turn. We're like, no, we got to turn. We got to go back and honor that mark. If we don't, we'll be disqualified. So we would have gone from, you know, possibly first to last and disqualified because we didn't honor the mark. So
what was your, what's the highest placing you've had before?
We got a third 1 year, but that was only out of, I think, maybe 4 or 5 boats. the year before that, we got fourth out of 12 boats, which was much, you know, that actually felt better. You know, there's more competition. This year this year was really small. There were only 5 boats in our division, so but we beat the majority of the fleet. So there were about 70 boats or so in the fleet that were sailing, and I would say maybe 40 of those boats started around the same time we started, and we beat like the entire fleet. We were down, I think we were maybe in second out of the entire fleet that started with us before we made that, you know, small error. Even then, even after that error, we still ended up, We a couple boats passed us, the bigger boats, after we made that error, but we would have finished in front of all them too, which would have been pretty cool.
But yeah, that's a great finish, and you guys got something to take home, and
definitely.
It's
great. It was conditions of a lifetime. It was perfect, beautiful all night. You know, tons of wind. We hit, I think, 10.2 knots at one point, so just cruising down the bay, rolling super fast. Beautiful weather, like light. It was just amazing because, you know, usually because it takes us anywhere up to like, you know, 10 hours on average longer than it took us, there were a lot of these like landmarks and points that we hit while we were sailing down the bay that we've never passed in the daylight before. So we were going past all these things that we're used to passing at night and that are lit up, you know, on the water or whatnot. So we're just making such good time. It was incredible.
Yeah.
Those 3 days that like the race, and then the next day we got there so early, so we were able to like relax and we slept off and on, and you know, they have a crab feast, so we did that, and there's the award ceremony, and we got to go swimming and hang out, and then wake up the next morning nice and early and just cruise back another beautiful day and just on the water, and just those 3 days just kind of relaxing and cruising along. And you know, I'd go to like pick up my phone and do something random, and then I just have the thought like, just put my phone down and just enjoy the water and enjoy the people around me. And we just had like good conversations and, reminisced about years past and bitched and moaned about the losing first place. But, you know,
yeah, that's part of it.
It was all worth it. Yeah. It's part of it.
I've only done a couple overnight, but we've also sailed many times with you guys coming in at night where it's getting dark and where it's all the way dark certain times, depends how far we are from the dock and where the race course is set up. But there's a really cool thing, and I mean, I understood the term, like, what's it, like a ship in the night, or, you know, like coming out of nowhere, right? That is such cool. Or dark, or whatever it is. But I mean, literally that happened multiple times where someone does come out of nowhere, because you're constantly, you're, especially sailing, it's a really, it can be loud, but when you get out there, it gets pretty quiet.
Right.
And the movement, depending on how fast you are, that just becomes the white noise. So you're listening for other things, and other sailboats can creep up on you because you're constantly scanning for little lights. And you say, okay, the shore is over here. This is over here. I think I see a boat. You're looking out for a lot of things, but you should know where you are by your maps and your GPS. But still, things do come out of nowhere, and it's a really cool experience. It's really I don't know. It's like hypnotic. This movement, and then all of a sudden you'll be on something. Like the year I went, we did actually almost hit a catamaran. And we hear, I think that was
it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah, it did. All of a sudden, this giant, it seemed huge because we were on the little 24-foot boat.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, almost hit that. And out of nowhere, all of a sudden there's yelling and lights and things and people. And it's such an odd thing. But it's really cool.
Right. And you got to be on, you got to like be aware of what's going on around you because. Except because you're not motored, it's not like you can just turn and, you know, I mean, you can turn, but it's not as easy just to, like, turn and go a different direction. You got to, like, make adjustments and make that turn. And in a race, you don't want to make those turns. You want to stay as, like, you know, smooth and straight as possible, gaining as much ground as you can on the next mark. But,
we've had some
close calls in the night.
Right. It's cool. Or you'll pass storage ship, container ship.
Yeah.
And those are just, you know, it's a skyscraper in the water.
Right.
And, you know, and you'll see them. So
fast. They look slow, but they're just flying.
It's cool to see those at night, too, because they're all lit up. So you can see people walking around and stuff. And it's, you wave to them. But it's what, and also as other sailboats are with you, kind of moving, you see them slowly move back, or you get closer to them. And it's kind of this, like, faceless thing. Because it's just dark. Right. You can maybe see someone moving around, but it's just slowly coming up past you. And then all of a sudden you're like, you know, you could be close to it. And then boom, it just goes. It's great. It's such a cool experience.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, there's definitely, like you're saying, there's that kind of, you have to be aware of what's going on around you throughout the night. You have to kind of be on point because the possibility of hitting something in the middle of the bay, because the bay is a busy place. We considered, because we finished so early and they did the award ceremony early this year, we considered leaving Saturday afternoon and just motoring, you know, throughout the night to get home. And I voted against it. It wasn't really a vote, but in my opinion was I didn't really want to do that because there's something really nice and really relaxing about that last day of just like cruising throughout the day, during the daytime, you know, on the bay and driving home.
Right.
And that can be much more relaxing during the day than it is at night.
Mm-hmm.
You know, cause then you get to see what's around. You don't have to worry about like keeping, you know, being on point all night to make sure you're not hitting anything. And, you know, you can see your markers and you don't have to worry as much about the GPS system and stuff to make sure you're on track. So we did end up doing that, but we considered it, but I'm glad, I'm happy that we did it the way we did and we were able to take that time and, you know, relax and, it's nice.
Yeah.
There's a spot down in St. Mary's College right on the water because the race ends right where their sailing center is on the water. And up on the second deck, I put up my hammock caddy corner to one of the corners, like diagonally, and I hang it up on on the two posts that are diagonal across one of those corners that are facing out to the water. So I have a really nice spot and set up there to be able to put my hammock up and sleep. So I took a couple hour nap during the day and then slept that evening, Saturday night, in my hammock, which is like, so comfortable. It was really nice out. It was in the like mid to high 60s at night, so really comfortable temperature, and it was great. Woke up early and hit the road. It was the one thing, it was raining when we woke up in the morning, so it was like this light drizzle that kind of picked up, and the wind was blowing pretty good, so we had to motor into it for a while, so it was kind of blowing on us and getting us wet, but then it stopped, and you know, it was kind of like drizzly off and on for most of the day until about maybe 4 o'clock or so, 4 or 5. So then we had those last couple hours of just like beautiful evening, watch the sunset go down. And then we got back to our dock at 9:30. So it wasn't, you know, not even like super dark out either. It was great.
Nice. Well, yeah, great. Congrats again. That's cool.
Thank you.
There's some pictures of some of the stuff, the boat and you guys and your award and our brother, you and Drew. That was cool.
That's
cool.
Yeah, it was fun. It was a good time. It's such a fun race, and it's such something that we look forward to every year. You know, it's always the same time, and we've been doing it for so long that, you know, to have it be the conditions it was this year was just epic. It was great.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about, I guess, the projects? We just put out a video, and we're working on one now. We just put out the Viking
Axe
video.
Bill. Yeah. Yeah, that was good.
Yeah,
John Nagel from Nagel House Forge reached out to me to see if you know, to ask if I would handle the axe for him that he was making for a client. And he intended, like, when he reached out, it wasn't just to like make a video or to have it for free. Like, he wanted to reach out to me as, you know, someone who could also make some money off of making a handle, right? So, but I was happy to do it for him and you know, we got a good video out of it. It was fun to do, and I love making handles, and I love axe stuff anyway. So it was really cool to get his Damascus Viking axe in the mail and be able to play with it for a little bit and put a cool handle on it. There was someone who commented on the video kind of early on when we posted about the leather wrap, and they were like, rather the leather wrap like serves no purpose. You know, it's like it's too, I guess they were like gimmicky or LARP, like live action role playing.
Oh yeah, LARPing.
Like saying
yeah.
It was like, yeah. I'm like, no, its purpose is that I wanted to put it there. You know, like it's and the client wanted, you know, something that looked badass, you know. So yeah,
right.
Of course it doesn't really need to be, it doesn't at all need to be there. It's not doing anything except for it just looks cool, you know, like.
Yeah,
right?
Some people, you could use it as a grip, you know, maybe like closer up, and especially the way you did it,
you
have a little bit of grip if you're doing something close, you know. It,
yeah, it can serve a purpose. Yeah, right, exactly.
It can. There's things it can do.
Like the Damascus has no purpose. I mean, it could have just been a mono steel axe head. You know, it didn't have to be Coca-Bolo. It could have been hickory. It could have been, you know, there's like lots of stuff it didn't have to be, but all of that was, you know, that's part of.
Yeah,
making art as well as craft.
Yeah,
so but, yeah, I was like, why somebody?
Well, you know,
they I mean, just, you know, I understand what they're saying, but
yeah,
right. It was perfectly fine the way it was. Didn't need it, but it was cool. I thought it looked great, and it turned out really good, and it was fun. Got to make that itty bitty little nail, little finish nail.
Yeah, I had to keep that part in. It was nice. John sent over the video of him talking about it, which was good. Nice one take of him talking about it and some pictures.
Right.
So we put that in, and that's actually really one of the only times we've had we've had guests kind of on, but.
Yeah, right.
Definitely the first
really
time someone's people. Actually someone other than you have like has explained a process,
right? Yeah. Nicole actually watched it when we put it out. She was at work and she watched it. She was like, oh, I really like the part when John was talking about, you know, how he made it and stuff and the pictures. That was really cool. I was like, yeah, it was. I was like, oh, thanks for watching one of our videos. She's like, she never watches it. It's like, you know, but I think that one was a little shorter and it popped up probably during the day when she was at work and maybe had some downtime. And she was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah. But now everything turned out great. It's a good, just under 20 minute video. And
yeah. And that thumbnail, nice. Man, that's an epic thumbnail. Got that,
I
like,
know.
Sheep's fur around my neck holding the Viking axe. Like,
that was great.
It's funny because if I were holding that, like, with intent to use it, it would be facing the other way because it's like in my hand, I'm holding it, and it's facing to the right. I'm holding it with my right hand, but the blade is facing to my right instead of facing left. You know, so it's like, it looks a little funny, like, but it, you know, obviously it was done for the photo. We had to get the good shot of the blade and stuff. And
yeah.
It was fun with the sun in my face and like glowing beard.
Yeah,
the
sun
the hair's all like, yeah.
You have the red sunset on the right, and then you have the blue of the night. of the sky on the other side. It was, really, that's why people take pictures. That's why they call it magic hour.
Right, exactly.
Sunrise and sunset. But, I really liked the video. Came out well. And then now we're working on, we have the sheath, the sling for Kryn's axe. That's already done, so that'll be the next thing. And then we're doing a toy box for my daughter.
Right.
Out of a single sheet of ply. And we're seeing
single sheet of plywood, and then we're doing some fun stuff with it, trying to figure out and make work a catch system where you push a button and the lid will open on its own. So we're working on that, and it's been fun troubleshooting that in the shop as we're working. Because a lot of times a lot of what we do in the videos is something that I've already done a bunch of times, so I've already worked out all the processes and I just work through it, right? But this one, we've never done this before, so we had to figure out what to do as we're doing it, as we're making it, and trying things. We bought some spring hinges, which we thought would be strong enough to lift the lid on their own, but they're not. We wouldn't ever know that until we tried it once.
Right.
So it was had to do it in the moment. And also figuring out how to make the hinge work so you can put spring hinges on the inside that lift up the lid, and then, the lid's got to tip back, so you have to have some type of the lid's got to either move forward, or you have to have some type of recess in the back so the lid can fit into it, and troubleshooting that. So it's been kind of fun, working and shooting the video and troubleshooting with you as we go to figure out the best way to make this work.
Right. Yeah. So it's getting the box together wasn't the most difficult thing. You're just cutting out flat pieces and then glue and screwing them together. But working out how to make a latch and a thing pop open and a secret compartment on the bottom and some stuff like that. It's kind of fun, and I like shooting these type of projects because it's something different. I'm oh, there's so many new things to shoot. So many like different angles. Yeah. There's only so much I can do on a knife or an axe or we've already done that.
Right.
And it's fine, and we'll keep doing those because that's what you like to make, but to throw in a different thing every once in a while, it feels nice. It's like shooting outside every once in a while too. We're like, oh, look at all these things, and I can shoot all this different stuff. This is great.
Nice. Yeah. It's been fun, and it's like I said, it's fun to kind of work it out. Work out the details and do it all, and have those. It's one of the things that's a little out of the ordinary and a little frustrating is the amount of room that it takes up on my bench while I'm working on it. So I have not a ton of room left over to put stuff. So I'm trying to juggle where things go and sliding it around. And it's just a different experience. It's funny. And I haven't built a ton of furniture in this shop, so having a bigger piece and, joints and stuff and pocket holes and trying to figure out all that stuff on the fly. It's been fun. And then, doing some fabricating to figure out what we're going to do for hinges and what we're going to do for a latch and stuff. And, I ordered some gas struts to be able to push open and close, a soft opening and a soft close. So I'm hoping they'll add some pressure to the hinges so then we'll be able to put them in and they'll just open it up. If not, we're going to have to add in some more hinges, maybe instead of, I don't know, we'll see. So it's kind of fun, just building it along the way. But that's the next video that we're working on. And, it's coming along well.
Yeah. Right now we have two spring hinges on it and it's not doing much. So maybe we can add one more, two more, and that might just be enough to make it almost where it doesn't weigh anything at all, even if it can't push it up. Hopefully it's at least not resisting. So anything else, the pistons and things like that, we'll just easily throw it up. I don't know. We'll see.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see. We'll just keep working on it until it works the way we want it to.
Right. Yeah.
I know. I was looking at different pistons and stuff, and different springs and tensioner arms and things, and it's hard to know how well something is going to work until you get it. And that's kind of the problem too. So
yeah.
Fortunately, we live in a world where we can order anything one day or the next day and get it, and they're relatively inexpensive, so try them. If they don't work, we'll send them back or use it for another project.
Yeah. So. Speaking of things ordered, did we talk about last time the projector? I think we talked about we had.
Let's see. I'm not sure. Did we talk about it?
I don't know. Sure. Well,
we may
I'll
have. Yeah, I had it written down on our list from last time, but I don't know if we ever got to it.
Yeah, well, reached out to some companies because we wanted to do, or I had the idea. I wanted
like
to do
outdoor
some
outdoor
theater nights, like especially. I think I did talk. I got a hill next to the building, next to the house I'm in. It's like perfect, and a nice big wall.
Yeah,
it's like
perfect.
Yeah, yeah. So. So, reached out and, Anchor or Nebula, that's their brand,
their projector brand,
for projectors. They sent us a really nice, 4K one. And, so we're going to do a video and review that, but also want to build a case for it. So everything I'd used them before, and I'd also seen online is people, it's always like a laptop on a table and then something plugged into it and the projector on something and the cords running everywhere. I was like, there has to be, I want one thing, like a case,
right.
Almost like a suitcase.
There's got to be a better way.
Like right. Just that you can sit down and have it ready to go, contain everything, maybe have an extendable cable that comes out of it and you just plug one thing in and it's ready to go. Right. So that's what we're going to do. And I got the screen and I used it for the first time. Actually, I've used it for two nights, just me and my own. Out there sitting, having a couple beers.
Nice.
I watched Olympics one night, and I watched some movies. Yeah, and the other night, I was testing different frame sizes. You know, most TV
right.
is 16:9, but a lot of movies, it's a much wider format. So if I had the projector set up for 16:9, it wasn't far enough back. Or I had right. empty space on the sides, and I was like, no. So I backed it up and tried some, you know, real widescreen format stuff, and that was cool.
Right.
Get it a little bigger, and the picture's awesome. And actually, this projector has great. It's got four 10-watt speakers in it in a circular pattern.
Right.
So kind of anywhere around it you're sitting, you'll get sound coming to you, and really good sound. Like.
Right.
But I also bought some PA speakers that have Bluetooth and stuff, and I want to set them up because if you're watching a movie, I want the sound to come from the front.
Right. Yeah.
But if I were just setting it up for a game or maybe for like a kid's movie night where they don't really care,
right.
It would be plenty loud enough. Or if you're like watching football or whatever, Olympics, you don't need it. It's plenty loud,
yeah.
but it's, yeah, it's great. So I'm excited. We might, hopefully have you over and some other people soon. And obviously we'll do it for once we do the video. And that'll be coming out probably sometime this month, August. So.
Right, yeah. That'll be our next project. I wonder if we can consider, when we're working on the design, consider some type of like a way to add more onto the box, you know what I mean? Like if when you get the speakers, like if you want to keep those additional speakers with it as well,
No, something. I can't. Well, I already got the speaker. The speakers are too big. They're like they're like a foot and a half by some. You know, they're big.
Oh, okay.
They're big PA speakers. So I mean, I guess you could hook them to the side, but then it's kind of a heavy thing. It's either. Yeah. I mean, that's one thing. It is all in one, but obviously if you want big outdoor speakers, you're going to need to have a separate thing. The all in one.
I
was going to say the all in one is more so you can take it anywhere and it is good enough.
Right.
And I want to contain all the power strips and the power blocks and all the stuff, like the screens will be able to go into a drawer, stuff like that. I wanted to carry everything.
Right. It'll be cool. And I think like also having like a DVD player in there as well.
You right.
Know? So
you can
it's
have
all in one. Yeah. You have like your DVD player, all your power stuff, your screens, and your projector. So basically you can just take that box and set up basically anywhere. And our plan at this point, we're still kind of up in the air how we're going to do it. Our original plan was to be able to just put a mount on the bottom with which you would then attach it to a tripod. So you could use any tripod.
Right.
But we'll see what we do for that or not. Because, I mean, I think that's one of those things that most people have is a tripod. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe not.
I mean, I feel
like something
yeah.
that's always been around us, but we're in a family of, like, photographers and cameramen and stuff, so.
Yeah, it's, I mean, if you buy a projector, a good choice, if right. you're not going to mount it to your ceiling or have somewhere right. that it always is a tripod. It's perfect. You can balance it. You can,
right,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I was trying to, yeah, we've been up in the air about that. Should we do it? Should we attach it? Or should right. we just have it on its own? Because once you add a tripod, then you really can't attach that to it. You need to carry that separately.
Right, yeah.
Kind of takes away of the little suitcase box thing kind of ready to go.
Right. Yeah. And I've done, like, folding legs with stuff before, so maybe we could do some type of folding leg thing. The problem with that is that, like, unless you're on level ground, you have to then be able to adjust it. So it's like folding legs is not a problem, but it's folding adjustable legs, which is a little trickier. So...
It'd be great if you could have something almost what's the word? What do you call the blowers? Not things you fill your mattress up with. The thing you step on.
Like an air pump. Like a
But what is that shape called? That thing.
Oh.
A
bellows.
Yeah, so if you could almost have, not actual bellows, but that something that could fold flat, and then
right,
you could like
yeah.
you could almost screw open on the front.
Right.
You know what I mean? So then you could get your exact, you know, it could extend up like that. It could lift the front to wherever
right.
you need it, but I don't know how.
Okay, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
something like that, that lays flat, but then you could just crank open
right.
to any, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, and I have a French easel, which is an easel that's a box as well, so it holds all of the paints and your stuff inside of it, and you can carry it out wherever I'm painting, you know, in the landscape, and then set it up, and it becomes an easel. So that has foldable legs on it. The way they do those is that they have a square piece of wood with a channel cut into it, so it becomes a square C, you know, and then there's a smaller square piece of leg that's on the inside. And the way that leg is held into that channel is just by some like brass flat bar that goes across, you know, to like stop it from coming out. And there's two of those, and it just slides up and down, and it's held in by a wing nut, or you know, it's tensioned. You just slide it out where you want it, and then you tighten down a wing nut with a washer, and it holds it in that spot.
Mm.
So that works really well. So maybe we'll do something like that. It's got to have a channel on the backside as well for that, obviously, for the nut. For the bolt end of that wing nut to be able to pinch it. So
right.
The option's there. It's more about like if we want to deal with it, you know, it's like if we want to actually build that as part of the box, you
right.
know, it's like, cause that's going to add a whole nother couple days into the build and whether it's worth it or not, you know, like, is it better to build it and have it part of it? Well, that would be cool, but is it just as convenient and maybe cheaper just to buy a small tripod and have a mount? Right. And then, you know, you can adjust that with forward, back, left, right. You can get your adjustments really easily with a tripod rather than with trying to deal with legs and adjusting the legs and stuff. So,
yeah, I feel like there's just an easier way we're missing. Or we can just get some type of small extendable legs, you know,
right.
from Amazon, buy them, stick four of them on there. Then you can extend them out any way you want.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe that's the trick. I don't
know. On the four corners or something. Just yeah.
Yeah. So that'll be cool, and we'll get some things, and we'll shoot it, and have a bunch of people over for a movie night and popcorn, and we'll get everything set up, and I think it'll be a great video.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be fun. And another video we have coming down the line, which we have more than just this one. We have a bunch of ideas, but there's, if you guys watched the Giotto knife build-off that was put on by Aaron Lee and Dennis Tyrell, who we had them on a couple weeks ago, we'll be doing another challenge. It's a Bowie knife challenge, which we talked about in that podcast, and that video will be coming out in October. So we have a couple more months. So look forward to that. If you guys are interested, check out some of those other makers that were on our last build off, and there'll be some more makers on. I'm not exactly sure how we're going to work this all out. And we haven't, the details haven't come out really. I mean, we've all been talking about it, the other makers, but there are going to be more makers on this build off. So I'm not sure if it'll be like a similar type of voting thing or how we're going to do it. But it'll be fun. It'll be fun to do a Bowie knife. I've never made a Bowie knife. Well, that's not true. I have made a Bowie knife before, but it's been a long time. And that was kind of just more like a big, almost like a big butcher knife that I made, or like a big chef's knife. So we'll see. But that should be a fun build, and I'd like to do some more forging and maybe some brute to forge look on it. So have some forged texture and stuff left on the Bowie knife, since it's not a chef's knife, so it doesn't have to have a real tall, skinny blade. The thinner the blade on a chef's knife, the better. With this being a chopper and a Bowie knife, it can have a thicker blade and, a shorter bevel. So I'll be able to leave a lot of that brute to forge work on the blade, which will be really cool. So I'm excited about that. It'll be fun. And then some kind of cool handle, some type of...
Yeah, I was going to say, have you thought about... Have you thought about that?
Yeah, I thought about doing some bone. I saw for the guard, maybe some type of bone or some type of an antler tine that can be can stick down, or something like that. I'm not sure, but
maybe you should do another antler handle. That was great. We did that once.
Yeah, I could do a full stag handle. That's pretty traditional with the whole antler handle.
That'd be cool.
That would be pretty awesome. Yeah, and then it gives that it could be a little more rustic, a little bit more Native American or something.
And if we're gonna, take the extra time forging and stuff, that would cut down on handle time. I'm just thinking of shooting time,
right? Yeah,
Yeah. Then it's not gluing a million pieces and shaping and blah. I mean, you do have to get it right, but
I could actually do make a metal guard. So kind of shape that down. Shouldn't be too hard. Have that slip all the way up on, and then have the antler come up behind it. Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah. Well, I'm excited. It's going to be fun. I'm excited. It's a cool build, and it's something that I've wanted to do for a while. I have to order some steel and get that in so I can start thinking. Or maybe we'll make it out of, leaf spring or something. That'd be kind of fun, too. Because it's, one of those things that doesn't have to hold an edge super, super well. I mean, yeah, you want it to hold an edge and you want it to cut, but, it's a big chopper fighter knife. It's not a delicate, carving knife or, chef's knife, so... and I've got a bunch of leaf spring, and that would just be a fun way to start. All right, we're starting from this leaf spring. Cause people love that type of, reusing stuff
like
railroad spikes and whatnot and files. And
that is kind of more. I feel like that's how it would probably happen in the in the early days. With Bowie knives, whatever steel was available, you could maybe make your own or. Yeah. Or you could bring it to someone.
Yeah.
Say, hey, I have this.
Springs
from
wagons or whatnot. Yeah.
Can you make something out of this? I already have the steel. Yeah. And, I've got the steel and I've got antlers. I have all the materials you need.
Yeah. The chunks of stuff. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe we use a railroad spike for the guard. Not that it would look like a railroad spike in the end, but use that steel because it's got that, 3/4 inch thick or whatever, which would probably be about what I need.
Yeah.
Cut off because it's something you might have a railroad spike and you might have antler and a
leaf spring.
Leaf spring or like a spring. So taking those things and putting it together and
Oh, that's a good angle. Whatever. Something you might find in the West.
A frontier buoy.
Ooh. Yeah. Ooh. Yeah.
All right, now we're talking. That's going to be fun. Yeah.
Frontier buoy from found items, something like that.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Yeah. It'd be fun if we had, it'd be cool to have, a wrought iron railroad spike, but I don't know. Because if the spike is just going to be the guard, it doesn't really matter what steel it's made out of. It doesn't need to hold an edge. It just needs to look cool. And wrought iron would have that, wood grain to it. Maybe I'll reach out to Randy Slaysman and see if I can get a chunk of wrought iron. I think he's got some. That might be kind of cool, too. And that's something that they would have had. A wagon wheel would have been made out of wrought iron, So like a spring would have been made out of like a spring steel, but the actual wheels would have been made out of wrought iron, you know? So like that could be, it could be something like that. Oh, we'll see. I mean, it doesn't have to be that, but that would look really cool because then if we etched it, and when you etch wrought iron, you get like a wood grain because it's got all these like long grains in it and stuff. So that might be look kind of cool along with like the antler. I mean, it's like steel color, obviously, but I know it's cool stuff. It'd be fun. It'd be fun to kind of figure it out. And then another good challenge, you know, I think it's just fun. It's fun for the community and it's fun to like to be part of that and doing it with a bunch of people. So we'll hopefully start that one maybe after the projector box, so we're not
we might
last minute to do that.
We might have to.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, you have a recommendation for us this week, Dev?
Yeah, it was sent to me from our buddy Matt Brown, who we bring it up a lot. He does the music along with me for the channel and for the intro to this. Coulter Wall. You ever hear of him?
Coulter Wall, no.
Coulter, I think. The song Bob Fudge, Live from the Back Pasture.
How do you spell his last name? W-H-A-L?
Wall, like a wall. W-A-L-L. Okay. Anyway, kind of a cowboy-looking guy, kind of does folksy cowboy music, or what I've heard of from him, kind of country.
Right.
But it is. It's just him in a pasture with two mics set up, and he sings this whole kind of, old storytelling kind of song. Nice. And it's really good. And really, he's got a great, great kind of deep singing voice, and it's really nice. And I think there's like two cameras, so it looks real nice. But he's like standing in the middle of a field, with some farm buildings behind him, and just singing this.
What's the song called? You said
Bob Fudge, called? I think Bob Fudge. Let me double check. Story of Bob Fudge. Cool. I think that's. Yep, that's it.
That's on YouTube.
Yep. Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'll have to check that out, and that'll be in the description. So if you want to find that, I'll put the link in the description so you can find it that way. Cool. My my recommendation this week is Cowdog Craft Works. That's Chris Giffro. And Chris was at the Timber Inn with us 2 weeks ago, whatever that was. And he was there. He does some really beautiful woodworking and has a really awesome like chisel sharpening setup. So he was there sharpening his chisels and he put together a really cool video of the Timber Inn. So check him out on Instagram at Cowdog Craftworks, and you can also go to his YouTube, which is Cowdog Craftworks with a space in between each word on YouTube, and you can check that out. There are two clips in that video of me in the background, so see if you guys can find it. But it was fun. It was really cool to see him like go back through it. And he said he had to. I reached out to him to talk to him about it a little bit, and he actually was. He was like, "Oh man, I didn't realize you were there. I like missed you completely." But that's kind of how it was. Like when we were there, and I think throughout the whole weekend, as everyone was working, like it wasn't. I mean, there were plenty of social times like before and after and stuff, but a lot of it was just everyone getting work done, right? We were all there to help get the work done so that way during the actual maker camp, we can put it up and then have more time to like talk about stuff and relax, and that's what we'll be doing. So we'll be at maker camp this year and putting together a video over there as well. So I reached out to him to get a couple clips of me in the background there Yeah, it's a really great video, so you can check him out on Instagram or YouTube. It's his video about the Timber Inn. He's got some really, really nice woodworking videos, and he's got some really good slow motion, like chisel cutting wood shots that were just so satisfying. So I was happy about that.
Nice.
Yep. Cool. All right, man. Well, we have a bunch of really cool guests. I've reached out to at least five or six different people. Next week, we'll be hopefully joined by our cousin Jesse, who's a woodworker and a wood turner. And I've shouted him out before in the past. He does some. He has an awesome pipe making company called Companion Pipes, and he makes like bespoke, beautiful like wood turned pipes, smoking pipes. So. Hopefully we'll have him on next week. It should work out. And then I have a bunch more people coming up in the future. So keep your eye and ear out for who we have coming up. We have a bunch of guests, and then, you know, always just kind of catching up and letting you guys know what's happening in the shop. But yeah, it's been a good couple weeks. It was nice to be able to take a week off and enjoy some downtime. We were pretty busy. Devin and I were last week, so we're like, this is a good time to have a little summer break. So we're back, and we should be hearing from us again next week. Thank you guys so much for listening. Make sure you don't forget to go check us out on YouTube, The Art of Craftsmanship, and you can follow us both on Instagram at The Art of Craftsmanship and at The Art of Camera Guy. And if you want to support the channel in all the ways that we put stuff out, you can go over to Patreon, patreon.com/TheArtOfCraftsmanship, and support us there. That's it, guys. Dev, you have anything else?
That's it. Have a good week.
All right, everybody, have a good week, and we will talk to you next time.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.